Alhamdulillah Rabbil Alamin, Islam is a complete way of life and indeed a beautiful way for those who bother to learn about it and follow the dictates. My name is Amina Adams and I'll be the one leading us all the way to 12 on Everyday Muslim Live on WFM 91.7. You want to invite your family members, friends to tune in. Of course, you can follow us live on WFM YouTube page. If you want to see what we look like here in the studio, we are live on WFM YouTube page. Do share the link with your diasporan family members and friends to tune in, because we're discussing something pertinent today: the silent struggles of the Muslimah. We're looking at the Muslimah's mental health. Remember last week we started this series on mental health and we kicked off with the brotherhood, right? Mentor Mo held it down for us. Today we have another awesome, outstanding person to walk us through, Hajja Shakiro Ajijola. Most of you already know her. She's a regular on the show. For those that are tuning in for the first time, meeting her for the first time, Hajja Shakiro Ajijola Mobolanle is a certified trauma counselor. She's trained in adverse childhood experiences and early trauma. She holds a certificate in child protection as well. She runs Bin Al Ma'amal Foundation. It's a non-governmental and not-for-profit organization which provides social and economic empowerment to survivors and victims of gender-based violence and disadvantaged communities across Nigeria. She's also the lead counselor of Reignite Therapy and Counseling. This practice offers psychosocial services to individuals who have experienced one or all forms of trauma. She holds an executive member position at the African Network of Professional Counselors, and she's a graduate of ADI School of Psychotherapy and Counseling. Hajja Mobolanle is an LLP practitioner. She's a passionate gender-based violence advocate, as well as being a trained, certified emotional intelligence specialist and a global change agent. She brings a warm, collaborative approach to her work. She believes that therapeutic change is best facilitated when an individual has a sense of safety and understanding, and she utilizes research-based trauma-informed and culturally sensitive practices to effectively support her clients' mental health and wellness. She has a lot to her heart, a lot of feathers to her heart. If I keep going, that'll be the entire show, I must say. Hajja Ajijola, assalamu alaikum. Sister Shakira.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullah.
How are you this morning?
Fine, alhamdulillah.
Okay, please ginger me. I need a bit of ginger. My audience says my voice is sort of tired. Maybe it is, so maybe you need to ginger me a bit more. All right, let's just get into it. Thank you for doing this with us. So for those that are just tuning in, please get your other family members to tune in. WFM 91.7 is the dial, but you can also watch us live on WFM YouTube page. This program is courtesy the Muslim Public Affairs Center. This space, Everyday Muslim, is where we bring honesty, compassion and faith into conversations that deeply affect our daily lives. So across our communities, Muslim women, we play multiple roles. We're the caregivers, mothers, wife, professional, we're daughters, leaders and nurturers. Yet behind the strength that we display, many of us carry silent struggles, emotional exhaustion. Sometimes we're overwhelmed. There's loneliness, societal expectations. There's pressure, unreal pressure on us to be perfect, subhanAllah. And sometimes we carry guilt of caring for everyone except ourselves. And that's our sad situation. So today we want to explore the life of this Muslim woman, the mental health, the emotional battles, the silent battles that we face. This invisible emotional load that we carry throughout. From your experience, what are the most common silent struggles that you have seen women face, Muslimas especially, and why do these deeply personal challenges so often remain unspoken, or why is it hidden? What do you think?
Okay, you've mentioned quite a few of them, but I think the one that stands out the most for me in most of the women that I see is usually a loss of self. because we carry so many roles, we tend to even forget who we are as women.
Right.
If you ask the average maybe man, who is he? He will have a million and one answers for you. But when you ask women, most times the first answer is, oh, I'm a wife, or I'm a mother.
No, usually the first answer is silence, because we start to think, we're trying to figure out who we really are before we then come up with something to say. So the first thing is silence, and you're lost. You're actually lost
in thoughts. We're wondering which of those roles is us.
I agree.
The thing there is, and the thing there is, those roles that we choose, or those things we use to describe ourselves, are not us.
Indeed.
They're just like you said, they're just roles that we play as women. Another thing is, most women tend to feel that overwhelming sense of, am I doing enough? And that's because we're doing so many roles. I think it was last year, and it spilled into a little bit of this year. Most of the people that I saw said most times they are up late at night, going through the different roles that they are playing, and they feel they are not doing enough because they are spread so thin in so many different directions.
Right.
So, and one of the things is, it's difficult for you to have that conversation with, you know, your fellow woman.
Why is that?
On different levels.
Okay.
Some people downplay it. Some say they downplay it because, you know, it depends on if you are talking to a friend that is achieving so much and seems to be able to carry all these roles effortlessly. And you are struggling, and you seem to think, I keep telling her every time that I'm struggling with this. And she seems to carry it so well that, is it that I'm not carrying it well as I should. So that's why most times women tend to downplay, especially how they feel. Their silent struggles, they downplay it a lot because they feel
they can't share everything
because they will look at me somehow and be saying, in this day and age where, you know, the strong women narrative is being portrayed,
right. The
woman that can balance and juggle everything is being portrayed, and you are now telling us that you are struggling. How? Why?
Indeed.
So those are the things that, you know, women face. And it's a whole lot, but, you know, we're slowly getting there where we're encouraging people to try and find, maybe even if it's just that one person that would willingly listen to you, you know, like just vent every single day, even if it's just one person. Because for us as women, one of the things I've realized with our silent struggles is, most times we don't need anyone to, you know, like tell us.
Prefer solutions, right?
We don't need solutions when we are, you know, like letting off steam.
Right.
What we just need is for you to listen.
Just
let me,
outlet.
Let me, you know, exactly. Let me share what I am going through. Let me vent. Let me just complain about it. And once I'm done complaining, while I am even complaining, I already know what I need to do.
Right.
And when I'm done talking, thank you so much, hug me, wipe my tears, and then, you know, I just get back on the grind.
Right.
So that's it for me.
What a woman's world we live in. So many women, we feel torn between pressure to be perfect, patient, and endlessly available. And yet our personal well-being is also there hanging on the loose. How can we differentiate between what Islam truly asks of us women and what culture unfairly imposes on us, especially regarding emotional expression and mental health?
Okay, so for the thing that is, religion and culture are on two separate planes.
All right.
So on the one hand, Islam, you know, emphasizes compassion, kindness. It also teaches us how to, you know, like strike that balance or find that balance. For culture, you know, has, you know, like its own standards. Just like I mentioned earlier on, it has its own standards of perfection and how you are supposed to do things. A man is supposed to be this way. A woman is supposed to be this way. You know, for women, now for Islam, in Islam, women are, you know, yesterday I was thinking about it because I was going over the questions again, and it just struck me that in Islam, women are catered and cared for such that even Allah dedicated a whole verse in the Quran to us.
A whole chapter, yes.
Yeah, I mean, a whole chapter, sorry. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, like just tells us that we are loved, we are cared for right from the start.
Right.
But for culture, there's already set down rules. That disparity struck me yesterday, and I kept thinking about it for quite some time. But in culture now, they're saying women are either, you know, you're supposed to be a caregiver, you're supposed to be able to cook properly, you're supposed to be able to know how to take care of the house, you're supposed to be able to carry the weight of so many things, you're supposed to be able to bear everybody's burdens.
Mm. Mm.
Culture on its own, in a way, when you know, like try and break it down from so many angles, where is the part where the woman has someone caring for her or doing all these roles that she does for so many people for her? That's where the disparity stood out for me.
Okay.
Because in Islam you have that community where even if you have one issue or the other, you have people standing in gap for you and all that. But culture wise, there are certain things. I'm Yoruba, and if I'm talking from my own, you know, point of view, there are certain things that as a woman in culture that you're not supposed to, don't say this one out to better keep it.
I hear you.
There's a long list of things that you are not supposed to share with anyone, not even your fellow woman. Keep it to yourself. Mm. Endure it, because women are supposed to be, even though, yes, culture somehow portrays us as being a little bit, you know, less stronger than men, but there's still that underlying tone of you must be strong in certain aspects. So that's where the disparity is for me.
Interesting. Yeah, I thought you were going to even also mention that at some point, actually, the Muslims today, we seem to have blotted out the line. Sometimes we're even practicing culture and we don't even know it's cultural, that this is not Islam. But anyways, that's not my bit to handle. Let's talk about anxiety, emotional exhaustion, hormonal changes, the burnout. These are real things that we face, but often overlooked in women. We're supposed to suck it in, right? What are the early subtle signs that a Muslim woman may be emotionally overwhelmed, even if she appears strong and active? And how can she begin to prioritize self-care without feeling guilt or selfishness? So that don't be so every time when they don't land for Yaba left, and that time we know say something don't happen.
Mm-hmm.
What are those early signs?
I always tell, just like you said, self-care. The thing with self-care is a lot of us tend to think the big things.
Right.
I like telling people, because even within different organizations that, you know, I volunteer or, you know, work with, people know me. When it comes to self-care, I mean, I don't pull any punches. Once I am tired, I am tired. I shut down.
Mm.
But I will delegate before I shut down, but I will shut down.
Mm.
And I always tell them self-care does not have to be something big, like taking yourself to a spa or going shopping. Self-care can be as simple as you just switching off your phone or putting it on silent for about 2-3 hours.
Right.
Not taking any calls, relaxing. So if we're dialing it back, how do we know, or what are the warning signs when we know that, okay, we're already getting close to that thing?
Mm-hmm.
One of the ways is when you begin to feel extremely exhausted.
Right.
You go to bed tired, you wake up tired.
Huh.
The most obvious one is when you don't have any interest in what you are doing. So if I'm using myself as an example now,
okay,
say because I, you know, attend to a lot of clients, and majority of the time some of those clients have suicidal ideation. Huh. When I'm getting to that point where, you know, maybe someone calls me and they say, oh, there's a client that, you know, wants to end it all, and then they give me a rundown, and as they're telling me that rundown, and in my head I'm already whispering or murmuring things like so this problem is not that big now, what is it?
Right.
And I said I'm already getting irritable.
Mm.
I'm getting irritated by the story. I cannot find that empathy that I usually have when I'm listening to people's stories, because in our own line of work, for someone to get to that point where they say, oh, they want to end it all, it means that person has gone through something we call stages of helplessness, hopelessness, and then they just feel there's nothing left again.
Yeah.
If I cannot find empathy within that story, it means something is wrong. The other one is, you know, just like you said, for me, if I'm going to use myself as an example, because burnout looks different
from person to person. Individual. Indeed, yeah.
For me, it's when I'm getting irritable, when I see that, okay, no matter what time I go to bed, even if I go to bed very early, the next morning I'm struggling to get out of bed.
Hmm.
I start assessing what is going wrong. Is it an underlying health issue, or is there something that I am missing? The other one is, like I mentioned, now, is when when I'm now, I can't dig deep and find that empathy for anyone. Little things just annoy me.
Hmm.
Another one is, just like you said, that is mostly tied to hormones, is headaches. I usually get headaches a lot, especially when I know that, you know, I'm already beginning to stretch myself too thin.
Hmm.
Headaches. Another one would be when this person begins to feel, how will I explain it? Okay, let me still tie it to the hormonal thing. Apart from headaches, most women tend to have breakouts.
Mm-hmm.
And it depends on how they break out. For some, it might just be, maybe they have pimples all over their face. For some, it's just rashes.
Mm.
For some, it might be as bad as
discolorations, acne, you know, really bad acne.
Exactly.
Yeah, eczema sometimes. Exactly. The whole face and neck is covered with all sorts of colors, yes.
Exactly.
Mm.
And if we're even taking it, you know, a lot more, what's that word? If we're taking it a lot more seriously, or we're even delving deep into it. One of the things that I discovered recently, or let me be saying for quite some time now, is I think it was a post. Yes, it was I've known that for quite a while, but it was a post a friend sent to me about us as women, that when you're undergoing a lot of stress in different ways, maybe minimal stress, regular daily stress, and there's no outlet for that stress.
Mm.
You are not letting off that steam in any way. It gets to a point where it begins to show up as health issues, autoimmune conditions, hormonal imbalance, like you said.
Right.
You have women with tummy aches that they cannot explain. You have those that, you know, they suddenly have mood swings. And then people are wondering, is she bipolar, or do we need to get her extra help? Because the person is, you know, you have like changes in their mood.
Yeah.
Today, the person is extremely happy. Tomorrow, the person is extremely sad.
You're seeing today, tomorrow, same day, one hour, and then just the next second, it just flips. And you're wondering, what did I... Mm-hmm. And you, Diana, with the person, you're wondering, what did I say? What did I do? Or was it something? Was it a message?
Exactly.
Was it, subhanAllah, yes, I can relate.
And most of the times when you ask them, what happened? They're like, I don't know.
Honestly, Andrew, you really don't know. You honestly don't know. But these chemical changes and reactions are just happening there because you've bottled up so much. You've let it all, you've locked it all in, and it's just exploding there. Or rather, should I say imploding? Because it's not coming out. So it's just been, subhanAllah, what women...
Because that's where it gets interesting for us as women, because we have so many hormones that do different things.
Yes.
When we are having our periods, when we are pregnant with children, after we've had the children, even when we are breastfeeding, when we are raising the children, there are so many different hormones that come into play. Now mix stress into that as well.
SubhanAllah.
It becomes a total reaction on its own. So that's why I always tell women that the first thing is when you start feeling tired, because tiredness and irritability are usually the first warning signs, those two first warning signs, plus, you know, like not being able to find that empathy for things. Those three are usually the first major warning signs. Once you start feeling extremely tired, and you know that it's not from the house chores or from carrying load for everybody, once you are feeling irritable, and then once you can't find that empathy for, you know, you can't find that patience to do certain things. And then one other one is when things that on a good day you love doing.
Hmm.
That's another major red flag. When things that you love doing on a good day
start to turn you off.
You lose. One is you lose interest. You are now just doing it mechanically. Then another one is when you begin to feel like as if your life is on autopilot.
Hmm. Hmm.
Because I've heard a lot of women say that they feel that it feels like my life is on autopilot.
You've lost control of everything. Everything is just going on its own. Everything exactly. Does a Sunday on my
Salat. After doing my Salat, I look at after looking at the children, I get them to bed. I cook food. I look at, and when by the time they, you know, explain that cycle, they're like, it's like wash, rinse, repeat. Once a woman begins to start looking at things in just that cycle, she's not thinking of anything outside of that. Because most times when I ask them that, okay, you're saying that this is how your life is 24/7. What other things do you do? Do you relax in between? Do you watch TV? Do you maybe just sit down and just, you know, take time out for yourself? For majority of those that feel like that, when you ask them, some will even look at you weird and say,
Where is the time? Where do you want to slot that in? Is it wine?
Even if they are resting, exactly. They'll tell you that maybe they are catching a quick break, maybe when the children are watching a program and they sit down with them. And I'm like, you are sitting there with the children to watch a program, it's not you resting.
Right.
You are still monitoring what they are watching.
Yeah, exactly.
So that you are sure that they are okay. So you are still doing a task in itself.
Right.
So when do you find time for yourselves? For yourself. So those are the major warning signs for me. And like I always tell people, like I mentioned earlier on, self-care does not have to be something big. It can be as little as shutting off your phone, finding time to rest, or just even sleeping, or say maybe take a weekend off. For someone like me now, because weekend of the line off. Of work that I do, that you have survivors calling at odd hours, either because they are maybe feeling, you know, they are feeling overwhelmed at that point in time, or maybe something happened at that point in time. Then my phone used to be on, you know, like 24/7. I'll be getting calls 12 a.m., 1 a.m. in the morning, until I realized that it was affecting my sleep and it was affecting my health.
Yeah.
So the way my phone is now, once it is 11 o'clock, the phone goes on do not disturb.
Right.
And it does not come back on until after Subway.
Right.
The next day. So unless it is an emergency and you call maybe more than once or twice,
right,
that's when that call will go through. Mm-hmm. And then I now
hello. Oh, I've lost. There's a network glitch. Haja Shakira. Okay, so we're having a bit of a struggle. We've lost her for a few minutes. Hopefully she'll get back. This is Everyday Muslim Live on WFM 91.7. And we're looking at the silent struggles women face. And we are shining the light on the Muslimas, because there's this level of... there's this perception that the standard we're supposed to maintain, the steez we're supposed, the composure we're supposed to have at all times, you know, irrespective of what we're going through, we're supposed to put it aside and face it heads on, right? We're supposed to be a certain way. And all of this, where is her own being in it? Where's her own mental well-being? Where's her own healthy being in all of this? And that's what we're looking at with Haja Jijolabo. We've lost her, all thanks to the network glitch. While she tries to reconnect, we're here. We'll take a quick break. When we come back from the break, all things being equal, we will have resolved this glitch that we are experiencing at the moment, and we can continue with our conversation. Hopefully I get open the phone lines. I did apologize last time that you opened the phone lines. Today I will do my best to open the phone lines so you can interact with us, but you already have our WhatsApp lines. Feel free to drop messages, we'll read it out as they come in. We'll go on a quick break and we'll be right back. Let me try to resolve this network issue with Haja. Stay with us.
Nothing can
Hajja Ajijola, are you back? Hello, sis. You're muted, sis. Assalamu alaikum. Hello. I see you're back.
Sorry, I didn't know I was muted. I'm
yes,
back now.
Okay, alhamdulillah. I know. Yes. I already apologized to our audience. Alhamdulillah, good to have you back. Right, so just before we got cut off, I was going to ask a question because I'm glad you mentioned something about us, pregnancy and the hormones that come with it, and then post-pregnancy and all of that. Let's look at postpartum depression, issues like that and the trauma and emotional neglect within relationships and unspoken resentments. They are rarely discussed openly. Why? Why do these deep issues, these personal struggles remain a taboo? You dare not mention it, if not you're, you know, putting your family in a bad light. How can Muslim families and communities create safe, non-judgmental spaces for us to seek help for those sensitive issues?
Okay, so one of the things I always tell people is, just like you've mentioned, we need to get to that point where we are able to dig deep and find empathy for women. Majority of the times when, just like I said, even with our fellow women, you're explaining to, you know, your fellow woman that doesn't seem to be struggling and she's looking at you somehow, or she begins to try to downplay your struggles. And you're wondering, how do I now speak to this person, or who do I share, you know, my struggles with?
Right.
How do I tell anybody how I am feeling? Or you tell people how you are feeling and they are like, you, that you are the strong person, that you are doing 1 million and one
thing. That everyone is looking up to.
And then you are saying, tired. How? How are you tired? I'm trying to be like you. You're not telling me that you are falling apart on the inside. So the thing there is, just like I said, us being able to understand that women face so many things, just like you said earlier on. So many things that majority of the time, even we as women too, tend to not take note of it.
Right.
We are looking after, just like you said, we are caregivers. So basically, we are looking after everybody who is looking after us. So it's like enlightening, and that's pretty much what we still keep doing. Enlightening, you know, everybody, us as women, at ourselves, enlightening, you know, husbands, fathers, brothers, uncles, even our religious leaders, that there are certain times when women would not feel or be at 100%. It does not mean that they are any less of a woman. So let's, you know, start, we encourage men to be more supportive. Pay attention more to the little things. Don't follow that, you know, that line of tradition that says, oh, women are naturally temperamental. Women are naturally, you know, troublesome. Women are naturally, you know, problematic. Majority of those labels are when we are undergoing those hormonal imbalances.
Right.
Or when we have those different hormones playing up at different times. If we are using, you know, our menstrual cycle as an example, there are some people that almost at least a week before, or 2 weeks even before their period shows up, their mood is all over the place.
Right.
They are temperamental. They are getting angry over, you know, seemingly inconsequential things.
Issues, yeah.
They are unable to be patient. They are crying at different, you know, the little things. They are just crying and you are wondering, what is wrong? And truthfully, most men get frustrated, and that's because there's a lack of awareness about how women's bodies or their, you know, their system works. And they're like, I don't understand, though. There are some days when, you know, she'll just change. She becomes a different person. And I don't know what to do. Nothing I say is right. Nothing I say seems to, you know, reach her. So just like I said, one of the ways to create safe spaces for women is to begin to understand that women's systems are uniquely created. How one woman reacts is not how another one will react.
Right.
What one woman can shoulder with it, another one would fall apart almost immediately. So it's us being able to, like I said, raise awareness about, you know, women's issues. I think that's what they call it in Senate and, you know, in political spaces. They say we are discussing women issues. We have someone that, you know, understands these women issues to the point where they can explain it. Because back in the day, we used to have, you know, male politicians and senators and all that, you know, discussing women-related issues until, you know, women say speaking up, that we can't have a man speaking about he can get it on paper, but he does not get it internally, or how we, you know, see or feel or go through these emotions. So it's continuing to raise awareness. And also, we can also start from our homes. I think I mentioned in one of the episodes I was on when they were talking about, I think, the boy child. And I mentioned that for my sons now, when it comes to that, because I know that period, that's, you know, and I'm always emphasizing on that, because that's the major part where I see where women usually go through those emotional overwhelm. For my children now, especially the boys, I explain to them, there will come a time once in a month where your wife, there's nothing you will see that she will understand. She'll be in a bad mood for some days. It might be a week, it might be 3 weeks. You know, they understand that menstrual cycle. I didn't teach just my daughter. I taught the boys the menstrual cycle as well. They understand the menstrual cycle. They understand that, okay, at this point in time, she will need menstrual pads. She will need a lot of comfort. She will need a lot of warmth. She will need a lot of understanding. It's a start. Also letting them know that there are times when you would need to step in for your wife, even if she doesn't, you know, request for ask it. For help.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's being able to, you know, like help them also, because we as women too, we most times do not ask for help, even though we know we need it.
We're so not, it's also helping to raise culturally. Who Who did you see in the family lineage? Seeking help.
You've got seen it.
Your mother was your mother was a Voltron. Your great grandmother was, you know, Van Damme. Who are you? Molotikawa, that you're asking for help. We don't have weakling in our lineage. Right. I think in addition to all that you've said, is them knowing. I think the critical thing is this thing is completely out of our control. We have zero control over it. We cannot, it's not a physical thing where I can then pinch this place and the pain stops. It's internal. I cannot tell this hormone to move to this side and tell this chemical reaction not to happen. It's beyond us. I think that's the critical message.
There's no light switch for hormones. They act on their own when they are needed.
Yeah.
As they are needed. And they act based on what our body is going through per time. It's like raising awareness helps. Yes. It's one of the first steps.
Right.
And then also, and you know, like encouraging and empowering our, you know, our male children as well.
Right.
We need to start from the house. If we don't start from the house, when they get to society, they learn what they learn.
Indeed. You're right. Absolutely. Thank you so much for that. So, you know, when you spoke about us resting when you need, so let's just listen. You turn off your phone for 3 hours, you sleep. You know, I'm hearing all that. I'm saying, wow, the discipline, and just the mental space to get into that place of not feeling guilty. Because what happens is an average woman feels guilty for prioritizing herself by resting or going for therapy or simply saying no. I need serious therapy on how to say no. Like, I'm dying. I can see that I'm dying, and just this task is coming up, and just say no and save your health. No, I must still do that thing. So that discipline to say no when you need to, how can we Muslim women develop that healthy boundaries and start to pull these things in? Self-compassion, you know, while we're fulfilling our responsibilities, we know, but within, you know, putting those critical boundaries in place, how can we get this balance?
Okay, so when we're talking about healthy boundaries now, one of the things I always tell women is, if you keep saying yes all the time, you would eventually lose yourself to the point where nothing will be left. You won't have anything left to give. Because I always tell people, think of yourself as a woman, no? Think of yourself as a cup of water.
Okay.
And you have a room full of, you know, people that some are thirsty, some are not thirsty.
Okay.
But because they just see that glass of water, Maybe the first person says, oh, I want to drink water. I say, oh, I drink water. Second person comes. They're not particularly thirsty, but because they saw, you know, somebody else wants water, I say, can I have a sip? And you have that whole full room.
Mm-hmm.
Not, like I said, not everybody needs your help at that point in time.
Yeah.
Not everybody needs your help. But because they see other people asking you and then they realize, oh, this person can be useful for me.
Mm.
Even though, you know, it's not like what I need her to do is that big.
Mm.
So if you are that cup of water and you keep telling everybody, yeah, take a sip, take a sip, take a sip, take a sip. Before you know it, that cup is empty.
Indeed.
Who is going to fill it back for you?
Hmm.
All the people that took that sip of water, how many of them are going to come back and offer you a bottle of water to fill that cup back?
Hmm. Even a teaspoon. Just won't give me a teaspoon of water. That.
Exactly. Right. How many of them will come back? So I always double when you say you want to build that no muscle.
Right.
I struggled with it too. So you are not alone.
Okay.
There were times when, as far back as I think maybe 2006, 2007, I was stretched in so many directions because I was saying yes to pretty much everything. I don't want to disappoint this person. Don't worry, I'll help you this. I don't want to disappoint that person. Don't worry, I'll help you this. And I realized that I was stretched thin. I was not able to do anything for even my own self. That's why when you mentioned that, you know, my switching off my phone, it came at... It wasn't easy. There were times when I would switch off the phone back. I would put it back, remove it from do not disturb that. Ah, what if somebody, you know,
is this in danger? What if?
Until I realized that, because the first thing was I had to find a support system, a group of people that were doing pretty much almost the same thing I was doing and understood that struggle. And I was able to lean on them in times when, you know, I felt guilty. I wanted to switch off my phone. I would call that person. That I'm feeling scared. What if, you know, these clients that we've been talking for a week? So what if, say, auntie, off your phone. Nothing will happen to the person. And if anything happens, it is through no fault of your own because you are already doing enough. So the first thing is be kind to yourself.
Right.
Go through everything that you are doing. Look for the, you know, the improvements or the achievements that you have done so far. Know that you are doing enough. The second one is being kind to yourself. The third one is, whether or not we like it, we have to start building that muscle to be able to say no.
Right.
But you need to also, you know, like, what's that word? You need to also make peace with the fact that by when you start saying no, a lot of things are going
enemies
to happen.
You're going to become the proud one. Exactly. You know, German, no. Exactly. What is wrong with you? What is wrong?
Yes, I've had boundaries in place. Last year and this year, I had to heighten that boundary circle a little bit more. And a lot of people fell off that, you know, that that bus. People that were used to, you know, having access all the time. People that were not used to hearing no. People that were used to having me say, oh, yes, I'll do this. Oh, yes, I'll do this. And just like you said, enemies showed up. People that got angry showed up. I have people now that don't speak to me again just because of this, you know, drawing that boundary. And being able to enforce it. And then there, beautifully, you would also have people that would understand and know why you are setting the, or putting those boundaries in place.
Right.
So one of the things with healthy boundaries, and as I tell people, just start with that first no. Yes, you will feel bad though. Even me, as I am now still, there are times when I will tell people no, and I will still feel, you know, that small pinch of...
guilt, you like you, and you know you can do it too. And you know you should have just done it. It won't take anything from you if you did it too.
Exactly. So one of the things I started doing, even though it gives me a measure of peace, but when I tell the people no, when I tell people no and they're like, ah, but you can do, just like you said, ah, but you can do this thing now. Right. I know you are busy, but I know you can do it. And I'm not telling you no because I can't do it.
Right.
I'm telling you no because I need to keep some parts of my space free.
Yes.
So that I can breathe.
Yes.
Some people understand, some people don't. But one of the things I have taken away from that lesson, like I said, last year and this year, is those that understand and those that stayed, those are my people.
Of course.
Those are the people that I know that when I am at 120% or when I am at minus 10%, they will be the ones that would stand in gap for me on those two occasions.
Let me quickly take you back, very sorry to cut in. So you did say something, and what I got was accountability partners. How did you select? How did you know the right? You did say people in your space, people who are doing the same thing with you. How do you, so for someone, are you advising that you pick somebody like minds in terms of career, work, as your accountability partner? Or how do you know who should go on this journey with me? Who's the best person to help me enforce these boundaries that I'm coming up with? Hold the answer to that, because one of our, shall I say, regular customers has sent in her questions on WhatsApp, and I'll just read it so you can take it all together. So Sister Bola says, good morning, sisters. Thank you for talking about the mental health in both men and women. People think mental health as that person incoherent on the street, not knowing that we all have one or two to manage. Number one, how do you encourage women to speak out when they don't feel right? Did you get that?
Mm-hmm.
Two, how do you encourage families having family time out at least once a week? It shouldn't always be usuro, asalatu, etc. And on the third note, how to imbibe self-love at least once a month? Those are the questions from Sister Bola. Thank you. And she says we need more of this. And I guess that message is for MPAC and WFM to create more of such conversations. Yes, yeah, so over to you, sis.
Okay. All right. So, when she, what was the first question?
How do you encourage women to speak out when they don't feel right? Accountability partner, my question, then her three questions. So all together.
Okay. Okay. So if we're taking all of it together, for building, let me even start with building, you know, like that family timeout.
Yes.
Is a seed that you have to plant. You can't just wake up one morning and say, oh, yeah. Moving forward, we're going to start having family time, you know, family time out.
Right.
That nobody's going to do this or do that. It is a seed you have to start planting.
Right.
And it's not something that would run seamlessly, but it's a seed you start planting. You can start it as little as, we live in a digital age now.
Yes.
Every child or adult has a gadget.
Yes.
Or two that they are holding every time. It can start with that. Oh yeah, today or maybe 1 hour. Let all of us just, you know, let everybody just sit down. Nobody's, you know, going to be on their gadgets. Or with the children, you can just say, oh yeah, let's step outside. Let all of us just, you know, of course, and as I said, it's a seed you have to plant, because they will complain. I want to watch this. Oh, I'm chatting with them. Just 1 hour. Or you can start with maybe small minutes. Maybe let's say 10 minutes or 15 minutes. So yeah, let everybody go outside. Or let's all drop our phones. Right. So gradually, you now begin to build on it. And then you can do, you know, like maybe make it into like a thing.
Okay.
Well, you know, Muslim families, sometimes they encourage that you do something we call family meeting.
Okay.
During that family meeting, you can now explain, yeah, these are the things we want to change. These are the things we think we need to do, you know, to bond as a family. That's a start. Then for women, when you say, how do we as women, you know, like share, I think that was the question. That
yes.
How do we
open up? How do we speak out when we don't feel right instead of locking it in?
So that in its own way also ties into, you know, your question. Finding that right person that you will talk to, that would understand where you are coming from.
Right.
Understands your struggles and will not start looking at you like really? Now, while, you know, just like I think there's this Yoruba adage where they say we cannot see, if only we could open, you know, everybody's stomach, we will see who is for us.
Yeah, yeah.
But unfortunately, we can't go around with a knife slicing people's stomachs open just because we want to know what they are thinking,
right,
or how they see us. Mm-hmm. But the thing there is, when you go through your, you know, just like you mentioned, it doesn't necessarily have to be somebody that is in the same field as you. Now, why did I do that in my own case? I was talking specifically about, you know, being a therapist and also being a gender-based advocate.
Yes.
Those two lines of profession are unique, such that we have certain things that we experience and other people don't. Like, say you have a client that her husband is beating her, and you know that the best option for her is to leave. But you cannot advise her to leave. You cannot tell her to leave. You can only encourage and continue to offer your own non-judgmental psychosocial support until she gets to that realization. So it comes with a lot of frustration.
Because your thing is...
Today, the woman is saying, I am leaving. I'm done with this man. And then tomorrow, she's blaming you. That is you, counselor, it's you. It's the way you were encouraging me and the way you were, you know, telling me nicely. That's why I thought that's what I should do. You're the one that influenced me. So we are going through a lot. And that's why it was easier for me to pick, you know, or select people in that space that understand how our clients' moods shift.
Yeah.
Or even for a therapist, you have a client that, like I said, is having suicidal ideation, and you've been able to talk the person down. You're already having sessions. The person is doing okay. And then suddenly the person is back to square one again.
Right.
And you're wondering what happened. How did he get to that point? So that was why I chose people for that particular block.
Yeah.
Now, do I have friends for different aspects? Yes, I do.
Okay.
How was I able to pick those people? I think it was unconscious, but now that I think about it, like I said, because I've been doing a lot of reflection this year, it was people that, no matter how many times I went back to them with maybe the same problem or a particular challenge that looked exactly the same, and I kept, you know, talking to them about it, and they didn't get angry or lash out or look at me funny. Just someone that was able to... It became a list for me. People that were able to listen to me vent over and over again without getting angry. Knowing fully well that everybody has their patience and their limits.
Of course.
Knowing that there were people that would hold that ground. And while they were holding that ground at that space for me, they knew when to just let me talk. They knew when to, you know, like offer one or two words of encouragement. And then they knew when to say, okay, so what do you want us to do? Or how do you think we should, you know, address this challenge? Because for finding that support system, it varies for everybody.
Yeah.
You know, just like you and I were talking about earlier on now, there are some of us that what we just need is someone to just listen to us vent. Don't offer advice. Don't tell me what I need to do at that point in time. Just hold that space for me. Let me speak and talk and cry and vent. And while I'm doing that, I already know the answers. And then when I'm done, just give me that hug, wipe my tears for me, tell me everything will be fine, and let me be going my way.
And remind me that you're available if I need to come back.
Exactly. And then there are some that, while they are talking and they are crying and they are a mess, they need you to keep offering those words of encouragement.
Yeah.
They need you to keep asking them, what do you want us to do? And maybe we should try this. There are some, so everybody varies. And then there are some that they just need you to sit in silence with them. Don't say a word. Don't say a word. So it varies for you. So it depends on what you want or what you are looking for when you need that support and encouragement. That would guide how you would choose people in your circle. Now, what I always tell people as well is, these people are holding space for you. Make sure that you are able to hold space for them too when the time comes. Because being a support system is not a one-way street. It is a two-way street. And I think a lot of us miss that when we are saying, I need a support system. You just want to be in that support system and everybody will support you.
But you're not ready to
give back.
That's not
how a support system, exactly. That's not how a support system works. It's like maybe two or three or four individuals all together leaning on each other, because it's not every time that everybody in that group will be strong.
Right.
Say today two people are strong, two people are weak. It's those two strong that will hold the two weak. One person is strong, three people are weak. Or even let's even say, for example, maybe by some fluke it happens that everybody is now weak at the same time. But because each person has stood in gap for each other at one point in time or the other, even in that our brokenness, we will still be able to
rally around each other.
That small stuff. Yeah. My own problem is not as big as Sister Rukoya's problem. But yeah, let me offer my own small help. as you are offering that little help one after the other, you begin to now find those pieces together again. So a support system is a give and take thing.
Yes.
You cannot say you'll be the one draining your friend with talk every single day. You're calling from Monday to Friday. And you're
unavailable when she needs to rant or vent.
Exactly.
That's when you're busy. That's when you have your family time.
Yes, I've seen people drop out of support groups because they said they felt unseen.
Mm.
That they were the ones holding space for everybody.
Mm.
They were the ones checking in on everybody, and nobody was checking on them. And they were like, ah. That's so it got to a point where this person was like, she couldn't share anything with the other people in her support group. And she said she just left. She didn't tell them anything. She just stopped talking to them. Stop talking about everything.
Interesting.
And that was where the challenge came. And how did she pick who, you know, she was going to let back in? Only those who reached out afterwards.
Right.
And she just left the group. What happened? Right. He didn't talk to us again. What's going on? So she said even at that, she only picked those that remained persistent. Right. Even when she kept saying nothing was wrong, that they kept, you know, they kept at it. That you can't just say you've been in a group for years, we all know each other, we all grew up together, and then suddenly you just say you're not interested again. There has to be something.
Yeah.
So for your support group, the most important thing is that person must not judge you, no matter what. You hear that line of we listen, we don't judge. When someone is at their lowest, especially when it even comes to mental health issues, the worst thing you can do for them is to start judging.
Right.
Or analyzing what they are telling you, or invalidating their feelings. Someone comes to you, the person tells you they've been watching this thing, they've been watching the news, and they've been seeing so much violence and, you know, horrible things happening in the media.
Yeah.
And they're afraid to step out of their house. And as that person is talking, I tell them, are you okay? The places where those things happen, is it in your house? Does anything want to happen to you? Maybe you step out every day and you come back home. Has anything happened to you? You have more or less like invalidated that person's face. It's not that the person is afraid that what is happening, you know, in the media is going to happen where they live. It is that fear of uncertainty.
Yeah.
That fear of, am I safe? That person was conveying to you. So it's just to be able to tell the person that you know that we live in an uncertain world. Eh? You just take a deep breath out, try and help the person to allay their fears. So I think the short form for me is when you're looking for a support system, make sure that person doesn't judge. Make sure that person has enough empathy for both of you. And then most importantly, if you are looking for a support system, know that you are also going to play an active role in that support system because it is a two-way street.
Thank you so much, sis. What I heard you say is day for who, day for you. Now, what do you talk with that in short, in the easiest summary? Day for who, day for you. Be there for the person who's there for you. So it's a two-way street. I hear you loud and clear. And thank you so much. We're out of time, but we've not even exhausted everything we're here to exhaust. So I am sure you know already you're coming back. Not to worry about it.
I'm always glad to come.
May Allah spare our lives till then and beyond. Jazakumullah khair. It's always a pleasure to have you on the show. Everyday Muslim comes your way every Saturday morning, 11 to 12 noon. And of course, if you'd like to be part of the show financially, please reach out to us at WFM 91.7. We'll be happy to collect your money and take this to the next level. Abby, we'd like to take it to the bigger sites. Thanks to Harrison and my sis here, Fumbi, for making this work. Thank you so much. All right, I'll leave you with Nasheed, and we'll see you same time next week. Have a blessed weekend and a blissful week ahead. Masalam.
Wa alaikum salam.
Try to remember not to take 'cause I know that one day, suddenly this will all come to an end. So my last wish is for you to be pleased with me. I do forget that my next breath.